On security, we're looking for that needle in the haystack. We're trying to find that one little bit of behavior that's different today than it was yesterday and could be an indicator. Well, there's so much data these days, it's like finding a needle in a needle stack. And I think that the only way for security professionals to be able to do their job in the future, given the extreme amount of data that exists and is growing, is through AI, machine learning and AI.
Hello, and welcome to Code to Cloud. I'm Tim Chase, Global Field CISO at Lacework. And today I'm excited to speak with Jeff DeVerter. Jeff is a chief technology evangelist at managed cloud computing company Rackspace. He has 25 years of experience in IT and technology and has worked at Rackspace Technology for over 10 years. Over his career, Jeff has helped companies like American Express, Ralph Lauren, and Thomson Reuters create and execute against multi-year digital transformation strategies. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you very much. Now, to be as transparent as possible, I did leave for about a year and 10 months. Thought the grass might be a little greener over at a smaller cloud company. You know what? Wasn't.
But
there was so much transformation going on at Rackspace. I really was looking for some change and found it for a good while. And then what I knew was Rackspace had grown up even a little bit more. And well, the gravity pulled me back in. And that was back in. So I joined in 2008. I left in 2018 and then rejoined in 2020 and have been there since.
I love it. What is chief technology evangelist? Tell me a little bit about the day in and day out of that and how you got into that role.
I got to tell you, it's the catch-all of all catch-all titles, but it really does apply to the day-to-day. I say that my job is broken up into three main areas. The first is I get to work with the office of the CTO as we figure out what the roadmap is technically to match the business goals of the company. Second is I get to work with customers, you know, with a company that's been around for nearly 25 years. We've done a lot of stuff over the years from, you mentioned managed hosting before, now supporting one of the largest partners of AWS, Azure, and Google, and what we do in private cloud and public cloud and on the security side and AI, of course. So there's a lot of things that happen. So getting to talk to customers and help them understand the suite of capabilities that Rackspace has to be able to help them transform their business through technology. And then I get to get out and just talk to the world like I get to do with you today, Tim. Whether that's on podcasts or I do a lot of conference speaking, I work with our channel and get to talk to those amazing TSDs out there. I get to do my favorite thing, and that's just talk about how technology can help.
That sounds a little bit like a field CISO, to be honest.
I think it's a horse of a different color, or maybe I'm using that phrase wrong. It's the same thing. It just has a different name, I guess.
No, that's great. That's a very Texas way of saying it, so I love it. So let's talk about the cloud a little bit and Gen AI. I'm really eager to hear your thoughts here, right? So we've both been in the technology field for a while. We've seen things come and go, but it feels like Gen AI is kind of this new thing that is here that everybody's figuring out how they can use it. And I think it might stick, unlike some of the other security technologies we've seen. So from your perspective, and it's early on, but like, how is Gen AI impacting cybersecurity?
So, of course, I love the phrase, I think it might stick, because I think it might. You and I have been in technology for longer than we probably want to admit to. But when we look at all the different technology transformations that have happened over the years, I mentioned private cloud, and that was that move from really just physical servers and now virtualization and then some automation on top of the virtualization. And now we have private cloud and then public cloud comes along and everybody gets super excited about that. And then, of course, now here we are with the AI stuff. But what I think makes AI so fundamentally different than all of those other transformations is that when those other transformations happened, different aspects of IT had to adapt. For instance, we talk about security a little bit here. So when we think about moving to a private cloud or moving to a hosting provider or moving to a cloud provider, security has to adapt to what the business is driving or IT itself is driving on the compute side. As opposed to now, when we think about AI in relation to security, yes, security has to respond to what the business wants to do with AI, be it generative or other, but also AI becomes a tool for security as well to be better, faster, more efficient, because so much has changed. You know, we think about where we are in the market today with, you know, I mentioned all these different types of cloud computing. Well, that we can just sum up and call multi-cloud, whether it's private cloud, public cloud, all the things. So most companies are using a smattering of all of those things. How do you secure that stuff? And then you combine that with the ever-increasing threat landscape that exists. I mean, these guys are not sleeping at night and they're not becoming fewer in number. So what keeps security people up all night? Well, it's finding people to help with that challenge. And now AI comes alongside and I think becomes the biggest tool in the arsenal that has existed to help thwart the challenge that exists on cyber.
No, I feel like you're spot on. You know, security is going to be inundated by threats. We're getting inundated by alerts. And we have fewer and fewer people to help, right?
Yeah.
And the fewer amount of people that you have to start pulling resources from other teams, right? That maybe don't have the security expertise. So now maybe you have some bodies, but they don't always know what to do, right? So I feel like people are really latching on to Gen AI because they have a hope that it can help them solve a couple of those problems, right? The resource shortage and also the maybe making sense of all of the data that's out there, because I think that's one of the biggest problems in security as well, is just making sense of everything. So if you, and doing it at scale. So both of those to me, I mean, personally, they do excite me as well. It scares me a little bit, I got to be honest, but just the whole Gen AI concept, but I feel like there's some good that can come. So I'm curious, you know, what do you think is going to happen? You know, put your predictability hat on here. You know, 2024, is it going to be the year where we start to see more stuff happen with security and Gen AI? Because I feel like this, like 2023 was just, I'll be honest, I didn't even have it on my, when I did my prediction list at the beginning of last year, what I thought this year was going to be, like, I didn't have Gen AI on it. I'll be completely transparent. I missed it. But like, looking into 2024, do you think that that's going to be like the year where we start to figure it out, where we start to use security more? Or do you think it's still going to take us a couple of years to let the technology mature and us to figure out how it fits best?
So everything you said is super spot on, but I wanted to gravitate to a couple of them. And then I'll answer your question. Let's first look at how AI can be used in a cyber context. So I think there are really two primary areas where, and we've seen examples from providers showing examples of this, even at Hyperscale. I saw Microsoft at Ignite, they were talking about this. Of course, if you think about AI, AI is nothing without data. So AI requires data. So AI has value based on the data that it's consuming. And in a security context, I think there are two primary piles of data to look at. The first is of all of the devices, being virtual or physical, that are securing an environment or have the potential to make an environment unsecure. Think of a server with ports open, things like that, or configuration drift in devices. That is an excruciatingly large amount of assets and even larger amount of data points. So I think AI is amazing when it can use as the data source all of the inputs of those devices that exist in a configuration, so that you then have a security professional who can now ask questions of the data, which is what we do in generative stuff, and say, you know, show me where, you know, all the configuration things are. Show me where there's been drift from yesterday today. Show me where there's potential for this. If what happened yesterday happened tomorrow, let's predict what might happen. So when we think about that entire environment, we can now use Gen AI. And literally, based on the cloud, we can use Gen AI to do these things today. The second aspect is when we think about the data sources. First is that data sources of all those elements in the configuration. The second is the logs that those elements are creating. So now it is the artifacts of all of the SQL logs. It is server logs. It is networking port logs. It is all of that stuff. And, you know, we used to say in all areas, but especially security, you know, in security, we're looking for that needle in the haystack. We're trying to find that one little bit of behavior that was different. It's different today than it was yesterday and could be an indicator. Well, there's so much data these days. My phrase that I use is it's like finding a needle in a needle stack. I mean, how do you find that one thing that is so unique and so different? And I think that the only way for security professionals to be able to do their job in the future, given the extreme amount of data that exists and is growing, is through AI, machine learning and AI. It's the only way to parse it and to look for the trends, because at that amount of data, people can't really look at those trends. So then to your question, what does 2024 become? And I'm with you, you know, and when we woke up on January 1st after, you know, whatever party you went to the night before, and now the world can magically spell ChatGPT where we couldn't before. And then Microsoft throws a, you know, an easy $10 billion at it. And all of a sudden everybody went from, this is an interesting science project, to maybe we should pay attention to this. And then almost moment by moment, Microsoft and the others now are releasing capabilities that exist there. But I think you're spot on in saying 2023 was, what the heck do we do with it? It's here. What do we do with it? Where's their value? Rackspace has been very upfront with helping customers in that area. We built a whole, we call it a spin-up of a business inside of Rackspace, the Foundry for AI by Rackspace. We call it FAIR. We love a good acronym. And that's really helping companies figure out how AI can help them. So I think now that we've had all of this experimentation and great use cases that have shown up from it, that AI in 2024, it becomes the co-employee. If we're doing it right, it really is filling that seat next to the brilliant security individual or whatever the department might be who sits next to them to help them be better, more intelligent, more efficient at the things that they do.
I love it. And one of the things that I'll kind of hone in on what you said, because as I've started to have some of these conversations, it feels like before we get the total use of Gen AI in security, we have to figure out how to get all of the data in the same place. Like, I think people still put things in a SIEM, and that's great. But, you know, not everything gets put in a SIEM. Typically, you put things in a SIEM that you would want to monitor for alerts, right?
Yeah.
But I think to get the total use of Gen AI and what it could do, you've got to have more than that. You got to have your vulnerabilities, and your defects, and all of that. And I feel like that's where the concept of the security lake is going. Snowflake has announced a security lake. AWS has theirs, kind of like this data lake for security. And it feels like if we could get that right and get that clean, that would be kind of a catalyst for Gen AI going to the next step for security. That's Tim Chase's view. You can say yes or no, or just because I feel like we do have a data problem, but we also have a data cleanliness problem, right? Where it's all kind of mixed up. We don't have a central place for it. We understand that problem. And that's why we have these security data lakes that have popped up. But I don't think we've matured that area enough. And I think if we could combine that with Gen AI, like that's money. That's my,
it is.
My 2 cents.
And, you know, Tim, think back when, you know, earlier, I'm going to go back to around the early 2000s. And that's when you started to see a lot of really interesting enterprise search products start to show up. SharePoint shows up and it's got a search engine in it. Google had an appliance that you could get. And what was the first thing that happened when you flipped the switch? The CEO a few minutes later calls and says, turn that thing off. Because so much of security, especially as it related to the knowledge worker, was security by obscurity. You know, it's over on this shared drive. It's 15 folders deep. Nobody even knows that it exists, let alone to go and parse it. And all of a sudden, some indexer goes and rolls through the thing. And now you type in, oh, I don't know, enter the year pay raises or reporting structure or something along these lines that they thought was very secure, but it wasn't secure. And now it is exposed. And now we have that problem on steroids.
Yeah.
As all of these groups start to bring together all of their data so that Gen AI can provide this value, we're finding that more and more of that security was by obscurity or other less efficient methods that ultimately then creates challenges. So what becomes fascinating for the security professional, think about, you know, even just 10 years ago, security professionals could sit in the SOC and they could, you know, nose down, the lights were dim, they worked by themselves, they got the things done, they kept it safe, they'd send emails when somebody did a bad thing and make it right. But you got to be a partner. You got to be a partner with the business on a day-by-day basis now to understand what they're doing, to help them be efficient while keeping the company safe.
Yeah. And that kind of gets into my next question. You've answered it a little bit, but like we've talked about some of the good stuff about Gen AI, but what are some of the risks? Obviously, kind of the security through obscurity is one of them, right? It could expose some things. Like, can you think of anything else that you think might be a risk with Gen AI and starting to use it in the security realm?
Yeah. So the security by obscurity is an example of the fact that you can create opportunity for the bad guys when you bring so much data together, even if it is just quote unquote log files and other sundry artifacts into the security lake that are about the infrastructure that's being used, because there's actionable data that exists in there from, you know, addresses and network names and all these sorts of things that exist inside of there that should they be compromised is an interesting map for a bad guy to then have an attack surface to then go after. So bringing all of the data together really is the blessing and the curse. It's the yin and the yang. It is, you have to do it if you want a Gen AI to work, because AI only works with data. And when you bring that together, you then create challenges. First of all, you mentioned data cleanliness. So you want Gen AI to be able to make intelligent and informed decisions based on the data that's there. But if the data is not great, then that's not great. And then when you bring all that data into one place, you know, you have to make sure that you're keeping the original security construct that it came from when you're bringing it together. That's why when you look at, I'll go back to Microsoft with the Microsoft Graph, you know, they can look at the data through the lens of the graph that knows who you are and what you should and shouldn't be able to see and be able to do. The same things exist over on Google and on AWS as well. But those things become massive impediments. Now, when you think other areas that become challenges is if that data is not right, then you're going to enhance the opportunity for hallucinations. Now, hallucinations, when I'm asking questions about my business, you know, is one thing, but hallucinations when I'm asking questions about my security data, that sounds worse.
Yeah, it is. Hallucinations is one of the big problems with it. And it's always hard. It kind of goes along with the fact that it's hard to untrain or retrain a model, right? So if you start getting bad data in there, it's not like a database where you can just do a, you know, delete all and a refresh of all the tables, right? It becomes very difficult. And so that's exactly it. I think you're spot on. So with that sort of mindset, like what kind of advice would you have for CISOs as they start to try and figure out how to secure this stuff as we start going down this path? It's kind of like cloud, right? Acknowledge that it's going to happen and just deal with it, then you're going to get left behind. And I think Gen AI is like that. Like we all know that we would still be in a rack-based data center somewhere, but the business decided they wanted to go to the cloud, right? That's how that happened. It wasn't security that said, I have a great idea. Let's put this stuff out there where anybody in the world can see it, right? That's not how that happened. So the Gen AI is going to be the same thing. The business is going to go, oh, ho, like let's start using it. Let's figure it out. So from a CISO perspective, like what do you think they should do to try and understand it and try and secure it and make sure we understand its usage?
Yeah. So a couple of things. The first that comes to mind is, and it's non-technical, and I mentioned it before, and that is the CISO has to have the relationship with every aspect of the business to understand what's happening. And they have to realize that they're not the scary people who have been hiding back in the SOC, and you never want to get an email from security because you only get an email when something bad has happened or you've done something accidentally bad. So you have to break that stigma. Same for the legal team, by the way. They've got to be in this as well. But it starts with, I think, amazing relationships. And if they don't exist, they've got to get built. And security and the security professionals in an organization have to have a seat at the development table. They have to understand where the business is going, where the business wants to go, what their goals are, the way that IT is going to pair with them and think about how they're going to deliver against that. And they have to be there as a voice in real time to help guide things along. Now, they should also have a very first class seat at the table to create guidance for how an organization should or shouldn't be using Gen AI. Because it's easy for us to sit and talk about it in the abstract and either, you know, thumbs up, we're going to do it, thumbs down, we're not going to do it. Because the reality is you have to look at it from business to business unit inside of an organization. You also have to look at it at the different types of AI. Because we can say AI in general, it's like saying transportation. Well, do you mean an electric scooter or do you mean a 747? They are different, you know, use cases. So, you know, do we want to allow people to use ChatGPT to help them get creative in writing a marketing email? 100%. If you're not, you're left behind. Do we want them using Gen AI to create code in real time in a public environment that becomes code that becomes part of our corpus of our organization or even things that we're selling? These are decisions that need to be made.
I was with you right until you said, without looking in public, like you kept going and going and going. I was like, yes, we wanted to create code for us. That's fantastic. And then you kept saying automatically in public code that we're selling. And I was like, wait, now, okay, now like, it's like putting those limits on, right? Like when I think about how I would use Gen AI in that, it's like, I want it to suggest code for me. If we find a SQL injection in code, like I would go so far as to have it say, here's the PR that I would submit that fixes it for you, right? Yeah. And then you can decline it or accept it. But like the auto remediation would scare me to death, right? And so I think it's putting those limits around it as a security leader, right? Of what you can do and what you can't do. And enforcement may be difficult, though.
It can be. You know, some of those has to be driven by people just doing the right thing. You know, just like I shouldn't share corporate secrets, shouldn't take screenshots of things and send them to the news if I don't agree. I mean, there are certain things that we expect employees to do the right thing around. But companies are getting smarter, too, when we think about like GitHub or some of the other IDEs and capabilities. AWS had some interesting announcements where not only will they, in a private instance, one that is just for a specific organization, be able to recommend code snippets. So you could either approve or not do that. But you could also go in and write a bunch of code, a developer could, and then you could use AI to write up the description of what they actually did. I mean, what developer likes to check code in and write the description of the things they did? None of them. But what Gen AI is amazing at is going in and saying, for this code, these changes were made. It has this impact on these downstream things, and that benefit is supposed to be these things. And all of that, it could surmise by what gets typed in. So again, the onion just gets deeper and deeper as we peel these layers out. Should we use it at all? Yes or no? Well, we have to think about it. Let's talk developers, public or not public. Okay, not public. Okay, do we want it writing code or we just want it commenting on code? And you can go deeper and deeper and deeper.
Yeah, you can. And that's part of the stuff that's blown me away, because I have seen it write code and then it comment code right when it wrote it. Like, we've seen it, you know, write a bash script and it commented each section. You're like, holy crap, that's genius. That's better coding. That's better, you know, commenting that our own developers did.
They've been showing examples of people writing comments and it writes the code. And that I think is pretty fascinating.
This is really what
I want it to do. And it can do that in light of your body of knowledge of the code base that it's coming from. So it will write it just like you could go to, this is a public example to a private example. You could go to ChatGPT, upload a whole bunch of stuff that you've written, and now say in my voice these things. And it will then speak like you speak theoretically. So in the same context, based on code examples of, you know, all the code that exists for a specific application, I want to do this thing. I want to connect to the data source that will give me all of the zip codes for our customers, making an example. Yeah. And it would be able to go in and find that API and then utilize that API.
That's genius. I love it. But I did want to hone in on a little bit of something you said about a business enabler, because that's one of the things, I know it's shifting topics just a little bit, but it's kind of in the same vein. But it's one of the things I really like to talk about, because I think it's so important, is sometimes we in security get so ingrained in what we're doing in our world, and we just want to take our metrics and what we know we need to do to secure the environment and then just tell that to the business, right? And I think that we forget that we have to understand the business. We have to listen to the business on what they need and what they want. And so I'm just curious your general thoughts on business enablement. Like, why is it important? And how do we get good at it? You had a good example of getting good relationships with legal and others, but what are your thoughts there?
Yeah, it's an absolute must. You know, in the old days, I'd love to go back to the old days, and it was easy, wasn't it? We could put up some routers, we could put up some firewalls based on, you know, where our branch locations were and our public applications. We could create a series of rules and then we could monitor. We're done, and upgrade and watch bandwidth and remediate any issues that show up. And that was that. But with the pace of things that are moving, you know, it becomes really easy in technology. And I'm so guilty of this myself. I'm so guilty of the fact that I love to play with the new shiny thing in technology. I love to get focused on technology for technology's sake. And we can think about that in a security context as well. But the reality is all of that exists for one single purpose, and that is for our business to be successful at whatever that mission is. And so if we have this, I use hiking analogies. We're hiking up this mountain and we can see the top from where we are. And if all we ever did was look at the top, well, we're going to miss the little ravines or the rocks. Or we're going to trip, or we're going to fall, we're going to do whatever. But if we're only looking down and focused only on our little patch, well, we may miss the top of the mountain. Maybe we just circle the thing. And so it's this balance, and it's the balance that has to exist between doing the business of security on a day-to-day basis while having a vision for where the business is going as well, that peak of the mountain, so that what we're doing right now aligns to that journey to the peak.
Yeah, I love that. You know, when I think about business enablement, a lot of times I describe it as having to speak two languages to some extent. Like, I think to be truly effective, you have to understand the tech. You can't be a CISO if you don't understand Gen AI and why you're using it, right?
Yeah.
And then on the flip side of that, like, you have to be able to understand the business. Like, I think you probably wouldn't be as successful in your role if you didn't understand what Rackspace did, how they make money, what their goals are for the upcoming year, right? It feels like to be a successful security leader and to have a successful security team, you've got to be able to navigate both roles. I just think the days are gone when, you know, you're a security leader that just understands, you know, network or whatever.
Yeah, you can't just sit back in, you know, the back of the building and again, back in the SOC and do the things that you always did. And a great example of that is with the rise of all of the cyber attacks. I mean, think about how many CISOs now find themselves in quarterly board meetings giving an update. You would never see that in the old days. You would never see that. It might roll up into the CIO, and the CIO would have a slide on security, and yeah, we're good, and there were these problems, and we solved them, and we moved on, and it was non-business impacting. But now, CISOs get to go to board meetings.
They do, and that's crazy. Like, we actually have a board book that we publish. We've published two versions of it, of different CISOs and what their specialties are, and then provide that to companies that are looking for board members. It feels like more, and we talked about this at our last CAB as well, when I had a bunch of CISOs in a room. It's either they need security expertise on the board, or the board needs consultation around the security expertise. Like, one of the two has to happen, because you still have a pretty good mix of people on boards of directors that just don't understand cyber. Like, they may have heard about the Cap One breach or one of the ones that's been published everywhere, right? But they don't know about, you know, the latest Struts vulnerability and how that affects them and how it would affect their business, right? They need kind of that guidance of the why. Like, why should I care? And how to translate that into budgets, I feel like. So it's, like you said, when I first started in security, security was buried under, like, I don't know, one or two layers, right? But now you've got them lined up to the CEO. You've got them doing it at a minimum, the audit committees, I feel like, these days.
Yeah. And it's so important, because in a blink of an eye, the business could go away. And that's what they've got to really be careful of and how they do that. And it ultimately, just like all things security, it becomes down to how do you manage risk? Especially in challenging economic times like we find ourselves in now, there's not unlimited budget. So there have to be real decisions that get made around, you know, where the investments will go and what the impact of not making an investment will be, and everybody nodding and agreeing of what that impact would be. And those decisions happening at a CEO or board level.
Absolutely. I've got a couple of more questions here for you. I want to ask just a couple of what I call rapid fire questions.
Sure.
And you can answer them as quickly or as long form as you'd like. So, what is the most important habit that an IT leader can have?
The best habit that an IT leader can have is to never stop learning. Just because you are a leader of people who are hands on keyboards doing the technical work doesn't mean that you can be any less technical. Mid-stroke in my career, I found it's an easy trap to fall into with reports and meetings and all the things. That training has never been easier to find. Reading has never been easier to find. YouTube, all the places. It doesn't have to be a massive certification, but you can never, ever stop learning.
I found this becoming harder as my career has gone on to make that time, right? But that's one of the things I feel like too. It's like, how can you secure the cloud if you don't understand it? How can you secure Kubernetes if you don't understand it, right? You're kind of at the mercy of Googling and vendors telling you what you need to worry about, right? So how can you intelligently do that? And I've always said, like, when I don't want to learn anymore, like, I'm just going to retire. Like, I've said, I don't want to learn quantum computing. Like, I know quantum computing is probably going to be here, and like, in 5 years, we're going to have to deal with it. I want to retire by then, because I don't want to
be done
learn.
By then.
I don't want to have to learn a complete another technology, right? And learn how to secure it. So,
you know, I think a great example, you're there in Music City, USA. So Nashville, Tennessee. And in a previous career, you know, I owned and managed a recording studio, went to school to learn how to be a recording studio engineer. And the guy who led the program had a mantra that it was beat into our head. I mean, here we are. I'm not going to admit how many years later, and I can still repeat it. And that is, the guy sitting behind, or the woman sitting behind the recording console, has to be the best musician in the room. Mm-hmm. Are they playing the music? No. But do they have to coach those musicians to get the right performance out? 100%. And they have to know the limitations and capabilities. And I think that's exactly true. When we think about leaders, IT leaders, are you hands on keyboard? No. Do you need to know everything about that technology to know what's possible and capable of your people? Yes.
I love that analogy. One final question. What is one tip that you would offer listeners to increase their cybersecurity?
One tip to increase their cybersecurity would be, it's going to sound antithetical, limit the number of tools that you have. I think that tool sprawl is one of those areas that is the biggest detriment. Again, it just becomes too much data, too many sources, too many things to pay attention to, which creates things that you can miss. And so having a tool structure to do the things that need to be done that is able to get as much as possible into as few number of tools as possible, there's actually really, really great value in that. And not to say that there aren't specific individual use case things that just knock it out of the park, but the general, think the Pareto 80% principle, less is absolutely more.
Yeah, you're spot on. And I talk about that a lot with customers. Sometimes you get into arguments of, well, I have to have everything that's best of breed. And I'm like, well, do you lose it when you have 15 tools that are best of breed and none of them talk to each other? Like, that seems like that's not helpful. So
that's right.
That's great. All right. That's all for today, folks. Thanks to everyone for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please take a moment to subscribe, rate, and review. And we'll catch you next time on Code to Cloud.
This podcast is brought to you by Lacework, the leading data-driven cloud-native application protection platform. Lacework is trusted by nearly 1,000 global innovators to secure the cloud from build to run. Lacework delivers true end-to-end protection, empowering customers to prioritize risks, find known and unknown threats faster, achieve continuous cloud compliance, and work smarter, not harder, all from one unified platform. Learn more at lacework.com.